Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country. The kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
What's up? I just wanted to be unusually extra today.
Listen, so, I had your back. I was with you.
Yeah, I know. I heard you. You're already ready to jump in. I feel like you. Crazy. I feel like Janelle Wheeler. You're just keeping yourself restrained from doing that most of the time on here.
Yes.
So, which is why we love and appreciate you.
So good.
Welcome back to season 3 of Comic Book Nation. I am your host, Kofi Outlaw, and with me from the always excellent comicbook.com staff, I got Matthew Aguilar.
What's up?
And Janelle Wheeler.
Hello.
And today, guys, we got some fun stuff to talk about. I'm real excited. The trailer for Spider-Man No Way Home finally arrived. And it's been a few days. We've had some time to absorb, to kind of let it soak in. And now we got theories. It's time to go back down the rabbit hole. So today we go back down the Marvel rabbit hole, talk about Spider-Man theories, what it all means, Janelle's favorite hunk of Mr. Marvel guy, Dr. Strange, we got a lot to talk about there. And yeah, but we also got some hunk of man for Matt to talk about, because we're going to review The Witcher!
The Witcher!
And the new anime prequel, Nightmare of the Wolf. It is out on Netflix. If you haven't seen that, you check that out, because that is worth watching. But we are going to give a kind of full review of The Witcher, Nightmare of the Wolf. Plus, we got new episodes of Marvel's What If to talk about, DC's Titans. Both of those shows kind of had really pivotal weeks this week. So we're going to talk about what we saw on the screen there. And as you know, this is Comic Book Nation, so we have some new comic books to talk about and a lot of stuff in between. So let's get to it. All right. Right up top, Spider-Man No Way Home trailer. So this Spider-Man trailer did, it was kind of the first teaser, and it did pretty much what you think a teaser would do, right? It kind of set the stage for where we're at after Far From Home, like what's going on with Peter Parker and company, and kind of what the galvanizing turn is to make this movie happen with him and kind of Doctor Strange seemingly messing with things and kind of unleashing this multiverse problem that allows villains from across the multiverse to gather up and kind of unite against Tom Holland, Spider-Man. Now, of course, we know there's more to that. This trailer also basically put a stamp on all the rumors we've heard about No Way Home that are going to be true, that this movie is going to be filled with probably surprises of cameos and people from past Spider-Man movies, and probably a big finale with Holland and Garfield and Tobey Maguire all teaming up. So that's kind of, we can put a much more semi-official stamp on all of that. But the trailer also raised some new questions, right? So we know we're getting a Sinister Six, and if you've been keeping count of who we kind of got teases from in this trailer, so far we got a Pumpkin Bomb from Green Goblin in the last.
Yes.
We saw Alfred Molina's Doc Ock, because they were just like, you done ruined your thing. You don't get any of that special surprise money. You're out there in the trailer now since you ran your mouth, so he's out there. We saw many kind of signature hints of Jamie Foxx's Electro in a more green and yellow comic accurate fashion. There was one fan who did a good job kind of breaking down in slow-mo one scene with Peter talking that seemed to reveal a surprise attack from the Lizard coming at him. So Rise Iphens, Lizard from The Amazing Spider-Man, might be lurking on this. There was one scene that looked like a boss battle from the Marvel Spider-Man video game that looked like Electro and Sandman kind of working together, and Thomas Hayden Church's Sandman from Spider-Man 3 might be back in this, or if they just want to save money, just a generic CGI, you know, Sandman, you know, however they do that. So that's five, right? We got five. So that leaves number six, correct? I don't think we've confirmed number six, have we? I think number six is still an open slot for surprise. And yeah. There's fun possibilities for that, right? Obviously, pulling from the Marvel-Sony trilogy, you could have Michael Keaton's Vulture kind of busted out, but that's kind of honky because it seems like he's still locked up when Morbius happens and whatever the timeline is with that. I'm not sure how that all works, but he's over there too, so I'm not sold on that. You could do something. There's a lot of theories out there. People are saying that, you know, all is still not what it seems, and that Jake Gyllenhaal's Mysterio is still somehow out there lurking and wrapping all this. And Mysterio is a classic member of the Sinister Six and could be kind of wrapped up in this in some kind of way. Or there's room for other big surprises since the multiverse seems wide open, something like Eddie Brock's Venom, but that'd be kind of weird to make him.
That is not happening.
Yeah. I would like that.
Hey, man, we're going, nothing's off the table, Matt. Nothing's off the table.
Not happening.
It would be kind of weird because Eddie Brock's Venom, in his own film franchise as the hero, so that'd be kind of a weird turn, and for him to immediately have beef with Spider-Man with no basis or context would be... Oh, really? That'd be Spider-Man.
And there's no way they're getting Topher Grace.
Yeah.
Back into that version.
Yeah. Know. So, or there's something or a big surprise. I still think they could pull a big surprise, like somehow wrap up James Franco's, you know, behind back in this, but that would be that'd be a big one. He loves that kind of stuff. Dude, that dude has been like a guy getting hung on the cross as a cameo, or getting hung in an execution as a cameo. Wow. Like he'll do anything. That's so true. There's a lot of room for surprises. I mean, so everybody in the comments, give us your best. Oh, you guys already are giving
They're waiting. Ooh,
we missed one. Somebody said this would also be a pretty, pointed out, and you're right, this would be a pretty spectacular kind of debut for Aaron Taylor Johnson's Kraven the Hunter. Would also be another one that could come.
So Crow said, yeah, can we get this? A good Kraven?
That was like the original thing we had for No Way Home, right? That Kraven would be coming in here and maybe hunting down Spider-Man and doing all that.
It's hard to keep all those rumors straight.
Really? Yeah, I don't know, man. So we'll have to see. But yeah, I'm kind of interested to see who this next Sinister Six member is. Oh, we've even had Paul Giamatti's Rhino.
Here's the thing. Can we get some? I wouldn't mind that just because maybe we can do it right. Because it was so terribly done last time. Maybe justice for Rhino a little bit and like redo that. Because like it was Paul Giamatti. It was Paul Giamatti, and that was so terrible. Like, he deserves a 2.0. It's all. I'm just throwing that out there. That's my wish. I will say, I think it's Vulture. I always, with Marvel, I always go, the simpler answer is probably the most likely.
Several people in the chat say the same thing. I think we might have lost our feed to Twitch, but that's okay. The show must go on.
Yeah, we're still on Facebook. We're still on YouTube.
So was that what that stuttering was? Yeah. I was wondering what that was. Okay, good to know.
Yes, yeah. I think we've lost our connection to Twitch. So if you guys are checking us out on Twitch, I'll like throw it in the chat. You can jump over to Facebook or YouTube. Yeah. And we're still there. And refresh.
Come on.
Twitch. Come on. Twitter went down earlier.
The fact that this is the first time this has happened to us on this podcast is a miracle. You know, I can't tell you how many times my streams have crashed.
That's a good point. Yeah. Look at that. Positive. Yeah. I love that. Positive.
But all in all,
it looks like I think we're back.
You know what's awesome, though? The ads are still running. So that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's back. Oh, Jim says it's back. We're back.
Okay. Yeah.
So
Welcome back.
Anyway, so not to lose too much time for our listeners, we're probably like, what are they talking about?
I know.
We're just doing the audio.
Edit it out.
Sorry. We had a streaming crash. It happens. But so that's the thing. Let's get into the real nitty gritty here. Janelle, do you think this was the real Doctor Strange we got in the Spider-Man?
No. And if it is, done with this film. If they do my boy like they did Iron... Oh gosh, I have some things. If this is Strange, I don't know. I'll be very angry with Marvel if Strange really just throws everything away. Like his entire reason for becoming, like people are like, this is a theory. Well, Doctor Strange has a big ego now because he saved the world and he predicted this end and end game and he was behind it all. No, his whole thing is that he had to drop the ego to gain his powers. Like he would lose all of his essence of who he is and his powers if he gets an ego again. I would be so mad. If I would be extremely upset.
Yeah, there's a lot of reasons I'm not buying it either. But I think the trailer, because I've been kind of mulling over this. The scene where he meets Strange in the Sanctum and it's frozen and that whole thing with the coffee cup and Strange kind of winking at him and doing the spell anyway, unless they really do some good context in the actual film to back up how Peter is convincing him, like this is a necessary step. That's a really weird decision for Doctor Strange right. to make.
Yeah.
And to go against Wong like that. Like,
yeah. And it's a really weird wave. It kind of crucial. He's making the decision to take on this crucial spell to affect the minds of people all over the world. And then he bungles the spell. Like,
give me Loki. What if it's Loki?
But that's what I'm saying. Like, I feel like
Loki likes to wink.
I feel like this is kind of, I don't think it's Loki.
I'm just throwing something else out there other than the one thing that everyone is saying.
That was awesome.
I still think that just the way the scene plays out and how the spell is unfolding, it's something that could still be a Mysterio trick.
Jason Abercrombie, that's a great.
Oh, the chameleon?
Thing. Yeah.
Ooh,
That's a great one.
I like that kind of thinking. Yeah, the thinking that it's the chameleon, that would be pretty great. Yeah.
But I agree with Janelle on that like I'm not sold it's Mephisto. I already saw, I know there's like 90 things now.
Everyone's
like,
oh my God, it's Mephisto. Everyone. Okay. I'm just trying to throw something else out there.
I feel like I agree with you both that it seems very odd behavior for a dude that in Infinity War told Iron Man that like I'll let you die.
And he let himself die. Like he was like, I will be dusted.
And so now hoping that this works.
Yeah.
The entire world's thinking for one person's life to be better, or you know what I mean? Like I understand now they might explain it to where it's not like Peter told everybody and now wants to take back his mistake.
Like in the comic.
This was done to him. So maybe that's the thing that swings straight. I still think it doesn't make any sense within the greater context of who Doctor Strange is at this point. It seemed very odd that that was all he needed to be convinced. But I think Chameleon or maybe Mysterio, maybe that's where he fits into this. I don't know.
I think you could also, if you didn't want to invest in Chameleon, Mysterio and Chameleon are great guys. You can kind of combine and switch, right?
Yeah.
You could say the one that died was Chameleon. You could say that, it's Chameleon who's kind of inherited Mysterio's stuff. Because if you look at that scene again in the spell, it's a scene that you could later reveal was just all light show and tricks. Mm-hmm. And that what happens is they're pulling off this con. And as Janelle says, it's just how happens to be a con they're pulling off as Sylvie is putting a sword through He Who Remains and on this cosmic level. And all of a sudden it's like, oh no, there really is a break in the multiverse and something happens.
Yeah.
And we were just playing around, but this is real. And this is kind of a real thing. Because I think later on a real Doctor Strange may show up and be like, what the hell has been going on here?
Yeah. Which I would love. Please let him be his character.
Yeah.
I will say it is very exciting to see such a Doctor Strange heavy presence in the trailer and then therefore in the film. Like even if it isn't him, it's just really cool to see how much he is in this film. Cause I thought that he was just going to make a little tiny cameo, maybe something quick, but it seems like he is he's integral to the storyline and this is going to be really cool to see him in it so much as a big fan.
Okay,
Spider-Man is not allowed to be in these films without some kind of surrogate chaperone father.
This does bring that into play.
No.
Trailer,
not
the most exciting parts of this trailer, the reason I'm excited for this movie after this trailer has a lot to do with the Doctor Strange stuff.
Yes, agreed.
And not very much to do with Spider-Man, Tom Holland's Spider-Man. The other, coming in from the other movies, Sam Raimi movies, all that stuff. But again, I feel like I'm going to say the same thing after this. I hope I don't. But right now, I'm at the same point I am with every Spider-Man movie in the MCU, which is I just want to see Tom Holland have a Spider-Man adventure. And I don't need, like, I love Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. I don't need every single movie to be Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends.
Yes. Correct.
Even though I will stump for Firestar being in the MCU.
Well, yeah, and I love it because I'm getting rewarded with Strange, but right. No, you're totally correct. And this is something that, you know, everybody on this podcast said that, like, okay, it's not going to be the Peter Parker show. Like, this is going to be about everyone else in it. And, like, you guys called it from the jump. And listen, now it's even more so.
Listen, respectfully, as they say these days, I just want to say this might just be further evidence, you know, that it's building also in Marvel Comics that Peter Parker as a character, maybe he's just running out of steam on being sustainable as a character. Like, we might have run out of steam on Peter Parker.
Give me some miles.
Hot take.
I'm just saying, like, how much more can we do with Peter Parker? What's he going to do? He's going to cry over Uncle Ben. He's going to fall in love with MJ and struggle with his dual identity and, you know, have all these problems.
I just feel like the whole generation didn't see that, though, on film, because we would have liked to see him. But they all kind of know it,
and they have Spider-Verse, and now there's, like, it's gotten so embedded in our culture that we're now doing, like, postmodern takes on Spider-Man's origin in Spider-Verse, right? Like, it's just kind of like this crazy thing we're doing now. So it's been, I don't know how much people are signing up and want to be interested in that particular character anymore. And so they've just started padding Peter as kind of like, you know, a backboard for a lot of other stuff. I mean, that's the comics too. It's not just on the screen. Like, every other right. Spider-Man comic event is like him with somebody else. There's like an entire spider family now. Like, it's just.
Okay. To be fair, yeah. The spider family's been around for a minute.
But like, I know, that's but not, that's like that's not a good years. Thing. That's like, yeah, I know. But that's an endorsement that we're like, this horse was dead a long time ago.
No, because Batman's not dead. Batman's still doing stuff. And there's been a Bat family for like the last 20 years, and there's like 90 of them. Like, having multiple characters based on one franchise doesn't mean it's fizzling out. If anything, it means it's selling well, and they just want to keep capitalizing on the thing. So I don't think Spider-Man as a character, sorry, not Spider-Man, Peter Parker as a character is dead by any means, because we just got Marvel Spider-Man. Insomniac did a great game based mm-hmm. on Peter Parker, and they found new ways to, you know, mess with that character a little bit and still play with the formula, of course, but that's comics. It's been like 75 years of character stuff, and these characters aren't dead. Now, I will grant you, the last year and a half of Spider-Man hadn't been my cup of tea, but someone else, like, there's a whole new creative team coming on the book. And that could just change things right away, right? So, I mean, I just think that's the nature of comics. I agree with you, though, as far as movies are concerned. I do not need to see the origin of
right.
most of these, like, huge marquee name characters over and over again. Because, yes, there are some that haven't seen it. But like Ovi said, most know.
Most know
Uncle Ben. Most know the pearls dropping with Batman. Like, there are certain things that are just embedded, whether you've seen these or not. So, I agree.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not trying to crap on Peter Parker. I actually like Peter Parker a lot. I mean, he's fundamental, you know, superhero to my love of comics and superheroes. But I'm just saying, like, I don't know. I don't see how you can go back now. Like, I don't see how you can do a Spider-Man 2 again. You know what I mean? Like, that was probably the best, most intensive kind of Peter Parker focused film out of any in the franchise. And it was a very deep Peter Parker story. At that, and one of the best Peter Parker stories I think I've read or seen or read, and I don't see how we can go back to that, because I don't ever see us being able to audiences being satisfied with just a Spider-Man movie with Tom Holland, his love interest, and like one villain. Like, that's never happening again. Like, that's just the cost of this MCU stuff. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right. I agree mm-hmm. with you. I just don't think that's a referendum on Peter Parker. I think that's a referendum on, they want to shove as many other things in. Like, they want to make the most of these movies with this character because it's not completely Marvel's.
And I think right? the writing's on the wall from like the Captain America stuff. Like, I think the next time you'll have a kind of smaller character focused movie, it'll be Miles Morales, like, or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
I like that.
Or Spider-Gwen.
Yeah. Or Spider-Gwen. Yeah, Spider-Woman. Exactly. Spider-Woman, Spider-Gwen. Like, yeah. And all that stuff. And so I think that's how that will, kind of, for that franchise, we'll get back to the kind of smaller character focused stuff.
Or Prowler.
Yeah, Peter Parker's gonna have some homies with him for the duration. He's part of the gang now.
Or Cardi.
Yeah, it's blood in, blood out.
But I am more interested in this. Like, I really wasn't very interested in any kind of Spider-Man content. And then now that all of these things are happening, I will say, like, I think it's broadening people's horizons. I think they're getting more excited about the film if Spider-Man isn't their favorite or something. So, I mean, job well done. They're doing the right thing. If they want people in the theaters from all the different fan bases, they're like dipping into like all of these different like pools of people.
And you got to remember, the end of this film could very much be after all this big explosive multiverse, crazy character overload, just boiling it all back down to a referendum on Spider-Man affirming who he is and kind of stepping out on his own, which is Kevin Feige and them shoving. Kevin Feige and him shoving him out the door and be like, "You're on your own now, Sony."
Yeah.
And then like,
go play with Venom.
Yeah. Don't mess it up. We got you here. Don't mess it up. But yeah. We'll see what develops. But yeah, Spider-Man: No Way Home. Let us know what you guys thought of the trailer. You've broken down a lot of theories on who Doctor Strange is, who else is showing up in this movie, and all that good stuff. So thank you for that. Before we break, we're gonna take one more Marvel note. It looks like we could be getting one of the more unexpected characters we ever thought we'd get, like a Marvel project, could be getting one just in time for the Halloween season. And that report is that Marvel Studios is developing a Halloween special for Disney Plus based on Werewolf by Night. Oh, man. So basically, Werewolf by Night is a Marvel character. There's been several iterations of it. Jack Russell, it's basically like the werewolves from Underworld, right? He could turn into a werewolf, you know, at will. So that it just reminds me, what's that Rick and Morty like interdimensional cable joke? It's like, oh, man, I forget. It was like Werewolf Detective, I think. Oh, man. Yeah, that'd be great. So we might be getting that. And there's also speculation that Werewolf by Night could be one of the supernatural characters that could show up somewhere like Moon Knight. So
Moon Knight.
Mm. Yeah. And if you're going to do that, you could do vampires. There's a lot of things you could do through that special that could actually make it worthy of kind of like focusing on, right? Not just a throwaway.
I didn't mean to, but it fit in with our Halloween theme. I sounded like David S. Pumpkins when I did that impression.
Ooh. And
that would be amazing. Wouldn't a Werewolf by Night and David S. Pumpkins crossover be amazing? It would.
Yeah. Kofi. I mean, I'm all about the holiday specials of any kind.
Sometimes I just wonder what I'm doing here.
Any questions?
Yeah. yeah, I mean, it's not the way we expected the Marvel supernatural universe to kind of blow wide open, but here we are, right? Like, you don't ever know what's coming these days. This Disney Plus is wild. So do you guys think there's any win to this? Do you think this could be a thing?
I'd love it. I think that like we kind of get a little ahead of ourselves when it's hot outside and there's no holidays going on. And I think that any kind of holiday special would be great.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I'm tripping. This is not going to start. This will be like later. This would be like 2023. This
right.
Is coming out. Yeah. I was really kind of messed up.
2023.
Well, it's going to begin production in early 2022.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's.
I was so like, it's Halloween, son.
Yeah. That's what I thought it was, too. But
it would
now,
be nice for.
Because we obviously do our homework on this show. No,
can
I'm
we just address again? I'm just saying the MCU is becoming Latino. Just want to throw that
out
there. Love it. Just want to throw that out there. Love that they're looking for a Latino star. Woohoo.
Mass agenda is still at work.
Yes.
Damn straight. But I do love. I mean, look, it makes total sense, by the way, for Disney Plus to start doing holiday specials.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like brilliant. The fact that it hasn't kind of happened yet is kind of amazing. It's going to be 2022 or 2023 before it really happens. But I think Werewolf by Night, I mean, there's so many characters that kind of fit into certain holiday themes in Marvel. So I think that's brilliant. And yes, then you can bring the fact that I am surprised at the fact that if this is true, that probably means then that the character won't debut in Moon Knight. So if they're kind of saving that I don't know, like maybe?
Yeah, the timing is so confusing. Because
so confusing.
Like presumably Moon Knight's going to come out while this thing is either in or finishing production, right?
Okay.
So you could introduce him in that because Moon Knight is in production right now, right? Like it's getting ready for it or it's, yeah.
Like
so
it's actually, right? Yeah. It's like there are... They are right about to start or it's already started.
Yeah, so that'll be our kind of introduction into the Marvel Supernatural universe, really. then this would come out as a special that kind of does anything. And this could actually come a little bit before Blade, if I'm remembering the timing right.
Bold Rhapsody in the chat says we have to introduce Vampire somehow.
Yeah, and like Blade would be coming in late 2023, around Halloween 2023. Okay, yeah, so,
all right.
So, yeah, this could be coming right around that time. They could put this out right around then, or they could do it if they could get it done in time, I guess, Halloween 2022. So like, yeah, man, this could be just the beginning of a whole Marvel supernatural universe that's just taking shape around us, right?
Yeah, it'll be fun.
So, yeah, and I'm kind of like trying to remember because there's all these other, I mean, there's so many things like this. I forget if they're doing like, aren't they doing like a Darkhold series or something like that?
Oh, God.
I can't remember all this.
I remember there being a Darkhold project. I have no idea
if where, how, I can't remember either. But they are doing more specials like this. Like James Gunn is working on the Guardians of the Galaxy Christmas special, right? And that's like 2022, 2023, one of the two. So, yeah, looks like we're going to be getting this stuff. That's kind of cool. Werewolf by Night. Who knew, right? Like of all the Marvel characters we've been arguing about, who knew Werewolf by
Night? Next, it's going to be like, hey, here's a typeface movie. And I'm going to be like, huh?
Before long, we're going to be hearing Sony's Cardiac is in development.
We better get that before typeface.
Matt, be easy. We are talking about Darkhawk today. I think that's a win
for you. Yeah, we are.
All right. All right, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we are going to keep on rolling through our recaps this week. We got to talk about Witcher, Nightmare of the Wolf, the new What If episode, the new Titans episode. We're going to get a little dark for a minute and talk about Bob Ross. And then we're going to talk about the comics of the week. All right. So stay tuned. Don't go anywhere.
Imagine sleeping in the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's iconic sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code Odyssey. So head to B-O-L-L and Branch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
We are back. All right. Welcome back to Comic Book Nation. We were just talking about the Spider-Man No Way Home trailer and Marvel's new upcoming Halloween special about Werewolf by Night. But now we're doing into our kind of a TV streaming recap of the week. And we are going to let Matt start with The Witcher.
The Witcher. I'm so, by the way, I cannot tell you how happy I am. That's how Kofi. Tweeting about this.
I was talking about something that like scarred my mind.
No. But the fact that it like resonated and like it was like it was not like it was awesome.
It was paying attention.
Yes, it was awesome. Nightmare of the Wolf is of course a prequel series to the mainline Witcher series on Netflix. Like that one, they are both based more on the books than the games, though. In both, there are elements taken from those as well. This one is set way before Geralt comes into the picture as the kind of main Witcher. And we're going to now question, are we going to do spoilers or no?
Yeah, bro, this is a week later. We're doing
Cool.
This is a full spoilers discussion.
So, spoilers, Nightmare of the Wolf spoilers. I didn't want to touch stuff unless
It's out there on Netflix, it's been there for a week.
Okay, cool. There is, of course, a great little hat tip to Geralt in this towards the end. And also you get to see kind of how Vesemir, how he was in his prime. It's so cool to just see this character because I'm so used to the kind of the older mentor version in the games and in the books. And so it's just awesome to see like he's kind of cocky. He's a little brash, but he's still so talented and skilled at his job. It was just awesome. Like I would watch so many more things with younger Vesemir in it. And then you actually get to see the fall of Kaer Morhen and how that happened. And there is some big changes as well. They make one major change kind of to the overall mythology in how witchers and monsters interact. And the fact that like witchers started creating monsters because like they were kind of starting to fade out. They were doing their jobs too well. And so to kind of keep on the line going, you know, certain witchers made decisions. And so like, that's really interesting because it opens the, it was always going to be a thing of like, okay, how do a bunch of townspeople essentially take on a fortress that is full of witchers and win? Like, that was always one thing, like, you know, there was this mob and stuff, and yes, numbers can do that, but like, you're always kind of like, how is that plausible? And I thought introducing that wrinkle into the mythology, one, opens up the fact that like, yes, you would get it wasn't just like a ragtag group, it was like an army, because it was people not liking this. And then also they add another element to the mix, a supernatural element that also kind of changes the odds. And so I was like, okay, and that leads to a badass final sequence. So I thought, you know, all the things we kind of talked about before, like showing the trial of the grasses and how brutal it was and how, why so few people made it through that training to actually become witchers. Like, I thought that was really, they did a really good job of illustrating that in a brutal way sometimes. But I thought there's so much of the Witcher mythology.
First of all, that was the second best line in this. It was like, did you know what it was going to be like out there, that everyone would, you know, that like no one would survive? And he was like, and his answer is like, what? Witchers would?
He's like, yeah, the ones right, who are yeah.
Witchers would.
And he's so, it's so matter of fact. And like, Deglan is a really, I mean, he doesn't have like as much dialogue as like Vesemir, of course, but he has some of the best matter of fact lines, and you understand where they're coming from, even though they're kind of doing some screwed up things. So I really enjoyed it. I came away just loving this. The action, I mean, look, the animation's gorgeous. The fight scenes are just really stylish and fun. But I just thought with the mythology, when we talked to the team in our interview, it was kind of like that part is talked about a lot in the books, but it is not defined. So there is, you know, we know about some of these bigger things, but they didn't go into a ton of detail. So it was kind of open for them to move things around. And I thought they did a really good job of making it feel like it's part of it, feel seamless. And we'll have an article, of course, of like how this fits into the timeline of the main series and things like that. And there's also already some Easter eggs in the season 2 images from this. So there are going to be fun ties. I thought it was really good, man. I came away freaking loving this. What would you guys think?
I think that it was interesting what happens when you see like a Witcher character, or like an actual Witcher that has like personality.
Yeah.
It was kind of like really, 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 really kind of fun, actually. I actually had a good time with this. And like I said, Vesemir is kind of like a really entertaining guy, and just seeing his skill and kind of he's like a Witcher Gambit, which was kind of nice to see. Anything Gambit is nice to see, but like a Witcher Gambit was nice to see. And his relationship with his master or his, you know, mentor, that I like that. That was good dynamic chemistry they had. And that made this kind of a weird father surrogate son tale. And it made the twist of, you know, seeing what his mentor did to keep the Witcher business going and all that, like that much more resonant, and why he had to kind of, and it just had good, it had good ties. It was actually a good story. Like his ties to the woman who ages, all of that was great. But I still have one criticism of this thing that I gotta say is really kind of throwing me off about the Witcher franchise, which is more so, I don't know if it's just me or this is how people felt with Game of Thrones, but I'm still having so much trouble keeping some of the names, the places, like the lords and the hierarchy all straight.
Yeah.
You say stuff and it's just like gobbledygook. Like, and I'm just like, it's just nuts. Like, yeah.
Yeah. It's one of those things that like, I totally understand it. I probably, when I watched, you know, the half an episode, watched the Game of, like, well, I remember what it was like hearing you. I think it was you and Brandon, I think, or you and Charlie. It was a couple of times where we had podcasts where you guys would be talking about stuff in Game of Thrones. And I'd be like, none of this rings. Like, it's like, oh, this place and the Lord of the, da, 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 like, you know, whatever. I totally get that, because this very much has its defined places and concepts and things. So I do think they do a pretty good job of introducing you to some concepts, but there is still some of that exposition lore stuff that it might not click. Janelle, did you have a chance to watch this or not?
I'm not sure. I sure did.
What'd you think?
Amazing. Yeah! So shocked. I did not expect this at all. Again, I'm not as into animated things. And I was pleasantly surprised yet again. Like, this and What If have just been, I've just been so pumped lately with, you know, anything animated lately. Anyways, the first scene, like the very first scene, just hooked me right away. Like the gore, the intensity, like I was just shocked. Like with the, I hate spoiling, but like straight up, like the tentacle coming through the dad's face at the little girl. It was just so intense. It was awesome. It was awesome. I'm really surprised at how hooked I was. I started off on an iPad. And after that first scene, I was like, oh, no. I need to watch this on the big screen. Like, this is really, really cool. So really excited how it ties into The Witcher, obviously, like Geralt, that we all know and love. And it was just, I mean, you guys said it really well. You wrapped it up perfectly. But I highly suggest everyone go watch this. Not, you don't even have to have liked the game. It's a good standalone, in my opinion, too.
Yeah, I mean, I think this was, I remember when we talked when this project was taking shape about like what it would be for The Witcher to kind of hit the anime track. And I think this was proof positive that it actually really works, even more so in some ways than Castlevania. And shout out to Adi Shankar, if you're listening, Adi. I'm not, you know me, I love Castlevania. But I'm just saying, for The Witcher to kind of help immerse us in that world and flesh it out, animation provides, you know, many more opportunities for the action, the magic, the monsters and all that, that are harder to pull off in live action, obviously. So this was a good introduction to it. And it made it feel like, yeah, there's a lot you could do with this franchise in that format, as well as the live action stuff we're getting. So good for the Witcher, good for Netflix.
Yeah, it suits the format really well. And so, and the fact we're also, I mean, this is not the, we're getting a live action prequel series as well. So that'll be interesting, which is set even further back. So we'll see how that goes. But yeah, I hope this is not the last of this we see.
No, this is good. All right. So moving right along from The Witcher to let's do Titans. Cause Matt, I know you were hyped about Titans. So why don't you go off and.
Dude. Oh my God. This is the one.
Bask in the glow of this.
Oh my God.
So Titans, Lazarus. Just set the stage. So it's Titans season 3. We're going to talk in spoilers. If you guys haven't been watching, Rich will need a Titans season 3 spoilers warning coming up because, so far things have been getting hyped. The Titans are taking on Red Hood. And this episode was a very pivotal episode. And I know Matt was very excited for us because he got the preview episodes. And this was one he was very excited for all of you to see. He's been going on and on about it. So, Matt, go off, King. There you go. There's your last spoiler.
So we got a spoiler. All right. So, yes, Lazarus. This is the one we had talked about a couple times and like getting the context of what happened. So here is where you get all the context of why Jason Todd and the Scarecrow have this kind of partnership, the drug he was inhaling, like all that stuff, how he came back, like all that stuff happens in this episode. And I thought they actually did really, really well for as much as they need to fit in and for, because I mean, we all know, right? He was alive pretty quickly. And we were like, well, how did he come back so quick? But like, I think they do a good job of putting all those puzzle pieces together. The thing is though, that's really not why I love this episode. This episode is so good just because Jason Todd, Walters does such an amazing job here in like two specific sequences. Like it's just good acting. Like it's just, I was just in, like I was immersed in the story between him and Bruce and him and Tompkins. And like, he has to go to a therapy essentially because like Bruce makes him go before he can become Robin again. And that back and forth between like Leslie Tompkins and him is just so, it's so interesting. And you're getting down to like some really rich character stuff. And, you know, she's like, you don't have to. I love that she's like calls Bruce like borderlines. What did she say? He has like borderline multiple personality disorder.
Borderline personality disorder.
Yeah.
And like, you don't have to dress up in a costume to like be okay. And they go back and forth and it starts out really contentious. But it's just a really engaging thing. And then we get the scene between him and Bruce Wayne. And like I told you, I have not been the biggest fan of this interpretation, but there was one point where I was like, but there was one sequence that like, blew me away, and this was it. And like, there's a back and forth here. Like I was glued, man. They have this just really heartfelt thing. And like Bruce continually screws it up. he's such a bad parent. He's so terrible. But like the back and forth between them and like, don't give up on me. And you know, he's like, I don't want you to be Robin, but it's coming from a place of like, I love you. And he's like, you don't have to be Robin to be my son. Like there's some really great stuff here. And you also feel like Jason Todd's genuine anger. Like you understand why he's angry here. It doesn't come off as like teen angst. It comes off as like, there's a genuine, you're seeing all the pieces unfold. So like all the Titans stuff kind of took a back seat here. And this was just a great Jason Todd episode. I feel like it's the episode that like justifies why you take on Red Hood in the season, why you let that character kind of take the lead. And you know, I was sold. Like I was down. I mean, geez, Scarecrow, there's a great performance there too, but you know, mm-hmm. like there's
just this was it for me. I love this episode and I love Kieran and what he's doing with Jason. I love this version of Jason Todd, one of the best actually. And I love what he's done with this character and his Red Hood. But for me, the real standout was Scarecrow in this episode, because this is the one where you finally got to see like mastermind Scarecrow. And I always forget his dude's name, the actor from Mad Men, but I always call him Pete Campbell now. What he did, his version of this character is different than any other Jonathan Crane take like we've ever seen. As just like the pothead kind of like acting like he's aloof, but still like a really sadistic kind of schemer and messing with people's heads and minds and psychology and all of that stuff is really good. And he's like a really good villain in this. And just to see him like dancing around like a shop. He's just like coming back from the dead and just like being all stoned and just like, you know. Yeah, he's really good at this. And that smile when he heard that Robin had died, like all that stuff. Like, yeah, he's doing a great job in this.
Yeah. So crazy. I mean, yeah, you guys said it perfectly yet again. Like an amazing episode, awesome character development. I was kind of like, you know, I don't have as much background with Red Hood. So to get that kind of like full explanation of what happened and how he came back and, you know, Ra's al Ghul, like that I'm watching Arrow right now.
Oh yeah.
So I'm just like, yo, I'm just so excited because everything's kind of connecting and fitting together beautifully. This show is so just spot on of what I feel like this comic is about. Like I'm finally getting like this dark, like seriousness from a show in like DC. And sometimes like, I think that's been achieved in the movies, but the shows are sometimes fluffy and happy with like CW and stuff like that. So this show just hits me on such a, like, it's depressing. Like I said, if you're binging it, it's like really haunting and dark and emotional. And I feel that way. Like I haven't felt moved by a DC show in the way that I have with Titans ever before. Yeah,
man. Hell yeah.
It's really good.
All right. Let's hop over the fence from DC's Titans to Marvel's What If with an episode that I think surprised all of us this week. I don't think any of us guessed like what this was doing this week.
God, there's so much content. I'm so happy. More content.
Yeah. So somebody in the comments said Crane's dance was greater than Zemo's dance. And yes, no. I do. I think DC has won the awkward dance contest. We just somebody's got to get on it and make more Titans memes. We need that dance gif.
Yeah, for real.
Who's out there? Come on, guys. We need that Titans.
And more gifs too. Jeez,
yeah, we need like that Scarecrow dancing gif out there. There's surprising little Titans gifs. I was looking for them today. So anyway, back to that. That's a detour. We sometimes take some hard detours here. But getting back to Marvel's What If. So I love this episode of What If this week because I think it is the one that feels the most detached from the MCU, even though it was clearly about the MCU, but more in the actual pure spirit of the What If comics, which is using the framework of altered Marvel continuity to actually tell still a story that had a point to it and its own individual story, standalone story point. And that's what this one did. So We're going to get in spoilers. Sorry, Rich. I know you're back there making it happen, but we're going to need like a what if spoilers. I'm sure. Yeah, there we go. We got that loaded up, I'm sure. So, yeah, we're going to get into what if episode 3. And this one was about what if the Avengers had never survived or Earth's Mightiest Heroes had died. And it was a look at how the members of the Avengers Initiative were targeted for assassination and being taken out. And Natasha Romanoff got framed for it. And I personally thought going in that we were going to get the story of how she never really left the Red Room. And it would be a reveal like she was still like a great actress and fooled everybody and really killed everybody. But no, there was a big twist in this episode, which, of course, is that it's also an Ant-Man story. Hank Pym uses his Ant-Man, well, yellow jacket, rather, tech, and kills all of the Avengers in some pretty gruesome ways. Like, that Hulk got Akira'd, and, like, I was like, oh, man, that's pretty intense. If you don't know what that reference means, you should sit down and watch Akira. But Hulk got totally Akira'd, and, like, I was just like, oh, man, this is intense. But, it was a good episode because it was just a standalone story that mixed up elements of the Marvel Universe in a slightly different way. And having Hank Pym be revealed as the villain of it was a nice twist and a nice little surprise, right? And it wasn't just didn't feel like a carbon copy of one of the movies with, you know, a different character in place, right? Because that's what the first two episodes arguably are. They are, you know, the first Avenger with Captain Carter instead and Guardians of the Galaxy with, you know, Black Panther instead. So this one actually felt like something new while being something familiar. And I really dug it.
Janelle?
Yeah, I'm loving What If. I am adoring the show. I'm shocked and excited and awed and just, it's making me love these characters more and more because in the end, like, if you don't have that extensive comic book background and you haven't gotten to know these characters really intimately, like it isn't always enough if they just get like one of their own movies or they're in Avengers a few times, like even with Loki, like I always loved Loki, but now I love Loki with his series. So I feel the same way. And What If, like, I feel closer to characters that, you know, I get to explore more. Like Black Widow, after watching the movie release, when I saw her in What If, I'm like, yeah, it's Black Widow. Before I would just be like, yeah, it's Black Widow. But it's nice because we're getting more content. I know that's so annoying, but we're getting more content of these awesome characters and it feels nice to see them in any way, like whether it's What If on an, you know, alternate dimension or multiverse fun stuff. We don't know exactly, right? Like it still hasn't been established what if is, has it?
Well, I think,
is it like a different timeline?
So I think what Jim was kind of referring to, because I remember last week he was kind of like, I'll be curious to see what you all think of episode 3, right? Because it kind of starts to build what if is kind of general thing, right? So like the idea seems to be the Avengers are lost here in this universe. And so then that's where maybe all these other characters kind of come in. Fury's going to look for his new team and you assemble this team from the multiverse, right? To kind of take that place. Like maybe that's what that was kind of a hint at. I don't know. But
what's confusing is Clint Barton. I mean, there's a lot of things that are confusing because Clint Barton died in this and in the Fury that we see at the end of the first episode has Clint Barton with him. So,
right. So like, it's, yeah, I'm not sure. Like that was kind of what Jim was like hinting at, that like this kind of begins that arc of like, oh, this is what the series is about. As just a standalone, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I thought it was really interesting. I liked kind of in that weird, Final Destination way of seeing how everybody dies. That was fun.
The deaths were great.
Yeah. You know, I thought they did a good job with like Hank Pym and like looking like a lot like Michael Douglas and kind of having the same sound. I like that back and forth. I'm always going to give a thing a little bit of an extra boost because Captain Marvel shows up at the end.
She
looks like a badass. So
Loki was fabulous in this too.
Yeah, like, and we got a King Loki of sorts. He's now the Earth.
Yeah. He finally got it. His glorious purpose.
Dude, Nick Fury and the two captains would be awesome to see team up and just like wreck some people. Like, yeah, that'd be great.
I did love the line where we still don't know that Fury's Loki yet. I mean, we kind of figure, but like, we don't know. No. And when he flips, he does that crazy flip and he's like, boy, you look spry for like he says, he's like, you look spry for your age or something.
That
like
was that. So you're right. Yeah. That's very Loki. I love that.
Great moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty good. Oh, man. Great. But all right. Yeah, they've got a chance to do something with Fury that Sam Jackson would be like, hell no. You're not doing that. Get that harness off me. So they got some super spy time in. All right. That was What If. Still enjoying it. Still loving it. Yeah, I said we touched on this. I started watching this Bob Ross documentary on Netflix, but I didn't realize how sad it was, man. And I don't want to bring up the show too much. I thought it was going to be funny because, you know, Janelle used to be neighbors with Bob Ross, if you don't know.
What? Like I didn't know that.
Dude, Janelle's yes. Lost. Janelle's all six episodes, like all six seasons of Lost, like crammed into one person, like and then like more and more stuff just comes out, and you're like, wait, you were there?
I did not know this.
Wait, you were sitting on the grassy knoll? Like how? Like yeah. It just gets.
I am Loki. I'm a variant.
Yeah, you just show up at random points in history, but yeah. So I thought this was funny. I was like, you know, I went on Twitter and I threw Janelle under the bus. I was like, Janelle Wheeler's going to review this on the show, and I was like,
no, I will. I have some stuff to say.
Yeah, go for it, because I started watching it. I was like, this is the saddest really thing.
I have not watched it yet, but I have heard like a bunch of crazy things. So, yeah, I'm very curious.
I mean, it's haunting. Like, I think because I knew him personally, obviously, he passed when I was in like fifth grade. So I knew him until I was in about fourth grade. And then he moved from our neighborhood to the beach, which is where he was from. But anyways, this documentary, it sheds a light. Like if you're going in there to like learn how to paint, don't, because you're not going to learn how to paint and you're not going to see happy, you'll see happy trees, but you'll see the real dark side of, you know, a time when people didn't really know any better. Like Bob did not know any better when he got into business with some corrupt-ish type people, which I didn't know either. The first question I get whenever I tell people like, oh yeah, I lived in the same neighborhood as Bob Ross, people are like, oh, you must have lived in a mansion in this gated neighborhood. I'm like, actually, no, we lived in a very, very modest neighborhood in Orlando and in a actual very rough area. And it is very surprising that, you know, he had the biggest house on the block, but was old. Like these are 1980s homes. And, you know, he by no means did you think that he was wealthy. Like you would have never thought that. And now as an adult watching this, I kind of see why, because we've come to find out that a lot of his money was withheld. The rights to his name they don't belong to him or his family. They belong to these two not so great humans who kind of figured out how to swindle him out of that. I mean, I think I'm using pretty strong words, but you can tell in the documentary that like everyone they're interviewing is like scared to actually just say it like it is. And you know, you're kind of rooting for the son, who is now much older and reminds you a lot of Bob, now that he's getting to that older age. You know, he tried to do a lawsuit to get back his name. He can't even use his own name with the last name Ross in it, because the last name has Ross in it. Like, that's ridiculous. But he did follow in his father's footsteps. He is a painter. He does paint instruction. I know this. Like, there is a Bob Ross school that you have to be certified in if you want to teach or whatever. Like, there's a whole thing in Florida. And I was always like, oh, my dream is to go do this, like get certified as a Bob Ross painter someday, like bucket list. And now I'm like, oh, heck no. Like, I want nothing to do with that, because that's supporting an ugly, history. I will. But two things that I'll make note of that are pretty cool that made me happy was they did show a picture of Bob in a canoe in a lake. And that was the lake that was next to my street. So I got very emotional, because I was like, oh my God, that's Bob on the lake in our neighborhood. And then he also talked about the squirrels, and one of the squirrels, I don't know which one, but I'm pretty sure he even said, he's like, this lady brought me this squirrel because it fell out of the tree. And I'm like, I'm almost positive he's talking about the squirrel that my mom brought to him to raise. So those are really cool moments personally for me. And there are some sweet things and tidbits, but just be prepared to hear the ugly truth of business ruining art.
Yeah, it's pretty raw, man. Yeah. It's pretty intense just to hear like just what was going on behind the scenes of that show. It got pretty sordid, man. It was really that paint show came with some drama. Like, it got crazy, man. Check that out. Bob Ross documentary. All right. So Matt, comics, take it away. What did we read this week?
All right. Well, let's go ahead and start with the fan vote, which was cool. Which, by the way, I will say I love getting all of the messages on Twitter when you guys are looking for like comic recs or like, hey, I'm starting to see, I love that stuff. And I love that you guys are voting on these. So don't stop that. It's awesome. I love it. Thank you so much for just taking the time to listen to our comic ramblings. It's awesome. So we'll start with Superman versus Lobo. Number one. Now, I know we have talked about it was for a minute there. It seemed like every week there was one comic that was like taking on something topical. I feel like this might be the king of all of those. Just the fact that like there is so much real world topical stuff like woven into this very unique Superman Lobo story. Like it starts out like when I went into this, I honestly did not know what to expect. So I just went in kind of expecting a big superhero brawl type thing. That is not what this is. We end up kind of diving into canceling people and hashtags, and like it was not at all what I expected. That said, I kind of came away like by the end, I'll say this. I liked where we got by the end of the book, and there were parts in the middle that I enjoyed as well. But I actually liked the destination more, because with the second issue, I'm more intrigued by what it sets up, because in the second issue, we're getting these two characters, by the way, spoilers incoming for these comics. In the next issue, we'll get these characters back into their home planets, but they're reversed because the person that did this wonderful gift got it wrong. So we have like Superman in like Lobo's home planet. And then we have Lobo in like a remade Krypton. And so that is interesting to me. So like, I like the destination. I didn't love every part of the journey, but it was still interesting to me. I don't know. What did you guys think?
I mean, this one was weird. Like I said, this is a weird one, and it was like kind of a hard one for me to get through because it's felt kind of weird and dense and all over the place. And like, it was very mismatched. Like the Superman stuff and the Lobo stuff felt very mismatched, but it didn't stick at the same time. There are a lot of details like I didn't remember. And I just read this yesterday and a lot of the details until you started talking about them. I was like, hashtags, what is he talking? And I remembered like, oh yeah, it was all about like, now people rising up against Superman. And then I realized it clicked for me what you're saying. What this book really is kind of a commentary on like where tastes lie and do they still lie with like a character like Superman versus kind of the brash, violent, you know, crass Lobo who could be, you know, more the tastes of today. It feels a little bit late in that regard, but I get what they're coming from and what they're going for. And it's just, I don't know. I think the most interesting Superman and Lobo will be that episode of Superman, the animated series. And that's going to be like the peak for me of how much I care about Superman and Lobo ever getting together. And that was just mostly due to Brad, what's his name from Everybody Loves Raymond being Lobo. How good he is. Yeah. And so like, yeah, Brad Garrett. So he's just so good at Lobo, and that episode of Superman, the animated series is boss still. So, but, you know, Superman and Lolo or Lobo wasn't like a gym. It was not my gym.
I like Lolo better.
Lolo.
Janelle, what'd you think?
I don't know. Am I wrong? I liked it. I was really into it. It felt long, but I really liked the story. I liked the characters. I thought it was interesting. It was bright and colorful. I liked the setting, like in vacation land. And I loved the androids. And I don't know. I was really into it. It felt like the Jetsons meets Superman. I don't know. It was just neat. I liked the villain and how like, or the, you know, the big scary creature at the beginning. Are we spoiling?
Yeah, we're spoiling. Bad, but you're good.
I loved his story. Like, I love this creature story that like he's a monster and he's awful. And then in the end, like it turns out like he's a kind little soul who's all alone in the universe. And he is like, it's just, he's like kind. And I don't know, it was just kind of cool, like don't judge a book by its cover moment. And I think the way that they left it hanging, what he did with Lobo and, you know, and the transporting them to the wrong planets is really intriguing. So right. Like, I definitely want to see where this goes. I like, it did feel long, but once I kind of like let it go, like, oh God, I'm going to sit here and read for quite a while. Cause I always do that. Matt sends me a comic and I go, all right, I scroll to the end. I'm like, how long is it? Like, that's the first thing I do, unless it's X-Men. And then I go, but, and I, as soon as I like settled into it, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was refreshing and light and fun.
See, that's why I love this. We have such, we have such contrasting opinions, but that's why I love
it. I don't have really high standards when it comes to like stories fitting in with other stories or like knowing these characters really well. So I feel like that works to my advantage sometimes, and it also works to my disadvantage sometimes. So,
well, let's keep
the let's get to the thing while we have good amount of time and talk about what you really want to talk about.
I didn't do that. I didn't front load it. I want to give everything its time, and then I can geek out at the end. Let's talk about Superman 78.
Fine. Superman 78, even less relevant or useful than Batman 89.
Yes.
There you go.
I didn't enjoy this one as much.
You did.
This is so bad. This book is still operating as if you only have the technology of the 1970s to realize Superman visually.
Yeah.
Like it's boring. Like, I don't understand like where you're going with this. Like, that was the movie that made me fall in love with the concept of superheroes. I love the Donner Superman film, but this does not spark my nostalgia for that. It makes me feel creeped out that Christopher Reeve is dead and like they're making this weird zombie impression of him on the page, and like it just doesn't have that spirit or that whimsy in it, not even the artwork or the feeling of it. It's emptier. At least Batman 89 felt like somebody really loved that movie and captured the soul of it and was trying to work in that actual universe. This doesn't even feel like that. This feels like a comic book I found on some like random highway stop newsstand. Oh, just like some Superman promotional comic.
Batman had like Easter eggs and things that were really cool to look into and like really dive into. This one just felt there.
I agree. I feel like it was fine. It was fine. Would I go back and read it again? Like, will I assign this again at some point? No, probably not. Because it was kind of was a number one and cool, but like, yeah, there's not really. I mean, here's what I will give it. I did think the way Brainiac looks, because Brainiac is kind of like the big thing we're setting up here. I did like that the reason he goes to Earth is because, oh, hey, it's upsetting the balance. Like, having a Kryptonian on this place is going to upset the balance of things on this planet. So I need to go eliminate that. I didn't like that as opposed to, like, I hate all Kryptonians. Like, I kind of like that there's, like, a little bit of something extra there, a little more depth than just, like, ah, Kryptonian's bad, and I'm going to go kill them. But that said, I agree. I did actually think the art did a decent job of kind of capturing the Donner-ish stuff. Mm-hmm. But I also agree that like Tim Burton's Batman world is just so on a different level of just like visually unique that, you know, an artist even going halfway down the mile to like capture that will still make more of an impression because it's Tim Burton's world.
It would also work because it's Batman, and you can believe Batman. The film realizations of Batman are always believable to a further extent because they don't have to like break the laws of physics as bad.
Right.
I'm looking at scenes of like Brainiac's ship out in space, and I'm like, Donner could have never put this together or visualized this.
Well, that's true. It was very Super Friends.
Yeah.
Brainiac as opposed to that. Yeah, Donner would have never done that. Agree. So yeah, kind of a whimper.
Now we got the pleasantries out of the way. Can we really?
Yes, we get to talk Dark Hawk.
Get to it.
Damn it. I've been wanting to talk Dark Hawk first. So Heart of the Hawk was what set this up, that one shot. And of course that reveals that Chris Powell, kind of the old Dark Hawk, sacrifices his life, and there's a bunch of questions there. And so the amulet finds someone new. And number one, that is, to me anyway, if you're a Dark Hawk fan, required reading coming into this.
Yes.
If you are not, I think it'd actually be okay. Like if you've never really heard about Dark Hawk or whatever, you would be fine picking up this issue. But like if you want to know some of the things behind it, you do probably need to read that last story of that one shot. But we get Connor Young, a brand new person that will be controlling the armor. 75% of this issue is just setting him up as a person. There is no Dark Hawk until the very last 25% of the issue. That said, I would normally be like, oh, that's a little, that balance is a little off for me. Because obviously I want to see Dark Hawk. But what I actually did think Kyle Higgins did was make you buy the, it's slow. There's a little bit of a slow pace here, but by the end of that arc, that part of his story, I cared. I was invested in his family, his father, the relationship between him and his father, relationship between him and his friend, the things, the inner workings of like going on around the school and the city and things like that that come into play later. I was like, okay, like that. You got me to care about Connor as a person before Dark Hawk gets factored in. Then once Dark Hawk gets factored in, I also just love the whole thing of like, he doesn't know what the amulet is. He doesn't know who Dark Hawk is because obviously Dark Hawk's like a D-list hero. So like he doesn't have the most well-known thing, even in Marvel's world. So like people are like, oh, hey, are you Kevin Hart, Snapfinger famous? Are you Dark Hawk? that's who that is. And he has no idea. Like he doesn't know who he is. So I like that. And I think that's going to be really fun to explore. But then in the end, like the design looks awesome. I love seeing him in action, the new wings and the claws stuff. Like he looks awesome in action. The new design kicks. So I came away very happy. It was not what I expected from a first issue, but then I should also know that Higgins does this a lot. Like Radiant Black, if you haven't been reading that, does the same type of thing. It takes a while. It takes its time in setting up the person. In the long run, that pays off. But in the short term, sometimes it's like, well, I need more stuff. You know, it can be kind of boring sometimes. But for me, this paid off. So that's how I feel about Dark Hawk. What did you guys think?
I think inevitably comic books have been affected by superhero movies. And what you see in some of these, like Higgins, is like the three act, right? Like in a superhero movie, you got to budget out how many superhero appearances you get in that first film.
Right.
You got three good scenes, right? Where they get three good sequences and it takes 45 minutes before the first appearance. And this is kind of what that felt like. This felt like a very cinematic take on Dark Hawk, which is, I think, something they always have to do now in the back of their mind is create these stories with the knowledge that these could quickly become, you know,
right,
series or whatever. But it did a good job making me care about the kid because in forgetting about the old kid, because I was like, I forget who old Dark Hawk is, Chris Powell, like, and what that was. And it weirdly made me feel, well, and this is just probably nostalgia, but being a kid the 90s are when I picked up comics and really got into them. And picking up that first Dark Hawk was a big deal in the 90s. And that first issue, because his was like Marvel's big new 90s hero, right? That they were launching. And I was so deep into those first like 10 issues of that series. And so this felt like, it took me back to like a kid again, but obviously I'm an adult now. So I didn't have the same magic with it as I did with a kid, but it was fun nonetheless. And I didn't hate that Dark Hawk's back.
Yeah, there it is.
Settle down.
Janelle, what'd you think? Janelle's gonna rain on my parade.
Yo.
No, no, it's not that. Yes, the backstory was a very it was a lot of backstory, and you know, I had a few questions. Like, I don't think it was very clear that the amulet transformed him. Like, I just kind of like it was a little rough to understand what happened in that time. Like, I wish they maybe would have like explained his sadness over his diagnosis, like shortened that a little bit and lengthened like the, hey, this amulet is literally, it's found me and transformed me, because I didn't get that until you said it during podcast. I just kind of went, did this hero come and save the day? Like, I didn't understand that he turned in to the hero, like until like the end. And I'm like, oh, I assume that he was the one that saved the day. Like, I had to just kind of assume it. Gotcha. They weren't very clear. But other than that, that's like nitpicky stuff, with art and, you know, whatever, but it was pretty good. Like, we'll see. Like, I felt an emotional attachment to him right away. So yeah. That was really nice. Like, I think they did a great job of, you know, seeing someone be diagnosed with a really terrible illness at such a young age. And like that definitely like got me in the feels. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is like really intense. And I do appreciate seeing that, but I you know, it was good.
Yeah. What I will say though, is I think you make a really good point, because number one, I'm coming in on a hype level. Right. And also like, so the way Darkhawk works is that he actually doesn't transform. He swaps out essentially. So he is controlling the armor, okay, but he is not inside the armor. It's an androidish type of thing. So it's standing in for him as opposed to him transforming into him.
Okay, then that really makes sense.
But that is not clear, because they don't go into that yet. Right. I imagine we're going to get more fleshed out about that in the next issue or two.
Yeah.
But that part is like, because he is dealing with this still. So even if he was in the army, you know what I mean? So there's going to be some interesting things of like, he has all this power, but, you know, there's kind
of this. He's losing the capability to control his own body.
Right. Yeah. So there's, and that was one of the most interesting things about the Thor run with Jane, was that she was dealing with cancer and sick in her human form. But mm-hmm. as Thor, like, you know, she would become this powerful thing, but also becoming Thor would stall the chemo. Right. So there's really interesting things at play there. So yeah. I'm interested to see what he can do with this. But I agree, it's not really clear. And if anything, like if I was going to make a tweak, I would have just shifted the balance just a bit.
Yeah.
Move that last 25%, maybe make that, you know, 35%, so you can get a little more of like an understanding of what's happening. So I could, no, it's a very valid
thing. I gotta commend them. I mean, trying to visualize MS and that process, if you've known anybody ever afflicted with that, is it's a hard thing to do, and they did kind of a good job of shining a light on that.
True. Yeah. I thought the artist did a really good job of interpreting that.
Yeah, exactly.
So that is comics.
All right. Well, we only got a little time before we got out here, but Matt, I mean, if you could do like a motor mouth, like 2-minute recap of what's going on and what happened in wrestling. Yeah.
We can do that. We can do it. Go for it. So first off, we got to address, it was Rampage last week. AEW Rampage on Friday was the big, much talked about return of CM Punk to wrestling. Whether you're a Punk guy or not, and I've said, like, I'm not the biggest Punk fan, but you can't help but get chills from that. I've watched that several times, coming back after 7 years outside of wrestling, and the comeback and delivered. And I was hoping, me and Jim argued, and my thing was, don't do that typical AEW thing. Let him talk. Let him do a promo, because that's what Punk rules at. They did. They let him sit there. I mean, it was like the first 20 minutes of the show was just him doing a promo, and it ruled. So love that. Came back on Dynamite as well. And as for SummerSlam, so that was the big thing there that kind of dominated conversation. And then at SummerSlam, we got two more big returns. We got the return of the man, Becky Lynch. It has been my, like, 2 weeks. We got the return of Becky Lynch and the return of Brock Lesnar. Brock Lesnar was done really, really well and was after Roman Reigns, because Roman Reigns just pile drive through Cena. Becky Lynch brought up a bunch of backlash, because everyone was happy to see her. and everyone was okay with her winning the title. Not everyone was okay, understandably, with WWE just squashing Bianca Belair in the process of it. And so that is, she's going to be appearing tonight on SmackDown, which we will be covering right here on comicbook.com. So definitely we will hopefully get more information on that. And then as far as NXT TakeOver 36, our boy Karrion Kross did lose the championship to Samoa Joe, though. This was Samoa Joe rules, so that was cool there. And then, of course, we got the big debut of Kaylee Ray from NXT UK coming over to take on Raquel Gonzalez. So that was an incredibly tight 3 days of wrestling.
Good job.
All right. There you go, Matt. Thank you, buddy. That'll do it for this episode of Comic Book Nation. We want to thank you guys for tuning in. As always, we put up new episodes every Friday at noon on Twitch, YouTube, Facebook. If you don't see the live show, you can always watch back right afterwards on any of those platforms. If you just want the audio, we're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, or tell any smart home device to fire up Comic Book Nation podcast to get it going for you. You can always check out everything we're thinking and doing over on comicbook.com as well. And we have our Marvel Focus podcast, Phase Zero, on Wednesdays when What If comes out. If you want to check that out as well on this same Twitch channel, same Facebook channel, I believe. Yeah, it's all there. So you can check that all out. If you want to come and follow the show, go to Twitter and follow at Comic Book Nation, or you can check us out individually. I am at Kofi Outlaw.
I am at Matt Aguilar CB.
I am at Janelle Wheeler.
And if you like the show, go on Apple Podcasts, give us 5 stars. We want to thank you guys. And we have, you know, guys, it's getting crazy, but, you know, there's some rumblings. There's some rumblings that there's a place. There's a place out there for us to go, that we may soon be back. We may soon be out of here, back in the studio.
She's scared
to be happening. I'm just ready to get out. Ready to get out and back in the studio. See you guys in person, right? Do like a real show again.
Wow.
Like season one.
What's that like?
Season 3.
I don't know how to interact with people.
I mean, the only way
Phase
to do it
Zero
is like,
won't be able to do that because like a lot of their people don't even live in the same town.
Hey, don't worry about what that show's doing. That show's got its problems. Point, they got to handle
it. I'm starting
that
some drama.
Some drama. Spicy.
Yeah, we're over here. We're gonna handle our problems, and we're gonna be down. We're gonna have a bolt. Word is we are pretty little new studio going on. So
oh my goodness,
this show might be getting so upgraded. We might be seeing you guys all together again, and that's exciting. All right, shirts. Yeah, man, crazy. It's been a crazy couple of years out here. This is Comic Book Nation. We'll see you guys next week. Peace.